May is National Mental Health Month, and a little later in the show, two mental health professionals will take your calls on experiencing or living with anxiety or depression during the pandemic. But first, we want to turn to someone who has made mental health services a focus of his work in Congress. Seth Moulton represents the Massachusetts 6th District, joins us now on the line from Salem. Welcome back, Congressman.
Great to be back. How are you?
So, I'm well, thank you. And I actually want to ask you the same thing, because the last time we had you on air, you were in isolation with symptoms of COVID-19. How are you?
100% better. My wife and I have fully recovered, and I'm glad to report once again that my 18-month-old daughter never had any symptoms at all. So she
very
got
glad to hear it.
Great. Thanks
so
for asking.
Before the break, yeah, absolutely. We've been thinking about everyone who's going through this, because it's challenging and it's such an unknown time. Before the break, Congressman, we reported that 60% of Massachusetts nurses say they feel that they're in personal danger of catching the coronavirus when they go to work. I kind of want to get your reaction to those numbers from the poll. The nurses also, about 44%, said they didn't have enough PPE. What is your reaction to how you're healing their feeling, hearing that they're feeling during this pandemic?
Well, we're hearing the exact same thing. And frankly, they are the warriors on the front lines of this new war. And just like people like myself returned from Iraq or Afghanistan with post-traumatic stress, we should absolutely expect that the nurses and doctors who are fighting this life and death battle will have mental health consequences. I've got a number to share with you. In April, there was a 1,000% increase in calls to the Federal Disaster Distress Hotline. And, you know, one way to think about this is that a certain percentage of Americans are becoming actually infected with the virus. But every single one of us is feeling in some way or another the mental health consequences of social distancing, of the isolation, or of just being scared that we're going to get this or a relative is going to get sick and even die.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I know last night you and the Samaritans of Boston hosted an online event on mental health in this crisis. What did you hear from people?
What we heard is that this is a real issue and people need help. And a lot of people just don't know what to do if they're concerned that a friend or a family member is having a mental health issue. And that's why I'm working so hard to get this new bill, the National Suicide Hotline Designation Act, passed that would establish 988 as the three-digit national hotline for suicide prevention and mental health crisis, for the simple reason that a lot of people just don't even know whom to call for help when they or a loved one is going through a mental health issue. You know, if you think about it, you wake up in the middle of the night and your house is on fire. You don't have to go rummaging through your stuff to find a phone book to know whom to call, right? But the fact that, I mean, do you know what the National Suicide Hotline is?
No.
I mean, not to put you on the spot, but hardly anyone does. I don't think I could even tell you it right now. And that's the problem, is we all need to know who to call. So if we make 988 the national number, everybody will know if you have a mental health emergency, pick up the phone, dial 988, and you'll immediately get connected to help. We're working really hard to get this included in the next part of the CARES Act funding.
So how far along, I mean, is that all that's left to do is the CARES Act funding, and then it could go live?
Essentially, there's already been a national study conducted by the federal government to determine the best number. That's how we came up with 988. The bill includes the funding mechanism, just like the 911 system, so that every city and town can make sure that they're connected. And then there's some companion legislation that would ensure enough funding so that there are enough people to staff all the call centers, which already in this pandemic are experiencing such a dramatic increase in calls. But the bottom line is that every day that goes by and more people have an emergency like this and don't know who to call, don't know what the number is, more people are dying. So this bill will save lives the day that it's passed, and that's why we're working so hard. By the way, not just bipartisan in the House, but bipartisan in the Senate as well. It's a bipartisan, bicameral effort to get this included in the next round of relief legislation. I've had two phone calls with the White House, which I'll tell you, a phone call with the White House, with the Trump White House, is not a normal thing for me in this administration. Had two calls with them in the past 2 weeks to make sure they're on board as well.
And one of our producers just sent a note in to me just to let everyone know, actually, we do have the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number. So if that's something that you're looking for or that you think you need out there, that number is 1-800-273-8255. Congressman, this is a personal issue for you. You've advocated for mental health services. Last year, you were openly discussed your own struggles with PTSD following your 4 tours in Iraq. Why is it important to open up about those challenges?
You know, I decided to share my personal story because I was inspired by some of the veterans I served with, many of them younger than me, who were willing to share their story, and it made it, I could see what a difference it was making in the lives of others. Because when you share a story like this, you make other people who may be going through some of the same challenges realize that they're not alone, and that being willing to talk about this and actually seek help is the way to get better. So frankly, I didn't say anything for a long time because I was scared of the political consequences. I'll be free to admit that. I was scared of the political consequences. But I was also doing this at a time when I was running for president. And I said, you know what, if I'm running for such an important leadership position, I ought to be able to lead by example, like I've seen so many other veterans do when they share their stories of dealing with post-traumatic stress. And so that's why I decided to share mine.
Conversation is starting to change. Do you think there will be a time when somebody who's running for a national office can be open about those experiences and not have to be afraid of the political consequences?
I certainly hope so. I was the first presidential candidate in history to do so, but I was pleasantly surprised by the incredible reaction. It was very positive. I mean, I thought I might be drummed out of the race the next day. Instead, I received calls from across the country from people who said thank you. And I still today get people coming up to me all the time and saying, thank you for sharing your story. It's helped me share mine. It's helped me get help. Or I know a friend or a relative who's been able to get help themselves. So I think we're getting there. But we're far from where we really need to be as a country, where mental health care is just as routine as physical health care. You know, if you think about it, if I were to show up late for work and say, I'm sorry, you know, I had to go get a physical, everyone would just have a normal reaction to that. No one would be concerned at all. But if you say, I'm going to be late for work because I'm going to have a mental health appointment, the reaction would probably be quite different. And it shouldn't be. It should be just the same. I'm trying to make mental health care as routine as physical health care. And we'll be a stronger, more resilient nation if we can get there.
Do you think the Commonwealth right now is doing enough for mental health services during the pandemic?
I know the Commonwealth is trying. I know that Massachusetts is ahead of the curve in delivering mental health resources. But I don't think anyone's where we need to be. I still know that people in Massachusetts are scared to admit they have problems or have difficulty finding the resources they need to get help. This is a very serious issue that's really been exacerbated and perhaps in a good way highlighted by this pandemic. In the same way that many veterans have set the example of being willing to seek care for mental health issues, I think we'll see doctors and nurses do the same coming out of this pandemic and be able to share with their friends and relatives and maybe even their patients that it's okay to seek help when you have a mental health issue. And frankly, I think we need to get to the point where even you don't even have to wait for a crisis, you know. To use the analogy again of going to get a physical, if you pass your physical with flying colors, the doctor would probably still take some time to say, you know, are you staying in shape? Are you eating healthy foods? And that should be the same with mental health. There are a lot of things that we can do, things like mindfulness training, for example, something now being practiced by our elite special forces, to simply get our minds in better shape. So maybe we help prevent a crisis, so stave off mental health issues by just being mentally strong throughout our lives. That's certainly something I'm much more conscious of now in my own life. And I think it makes me a better congressman. I think it makes me a better leader. I think it makes me a better husband and a better dad to just be taking care of my own mental health.
I'd like to pivot to some national news. We mentioned earlier you ran for president last year and suspended your campaign in August, and then you endorsed the presumptive nominee Joe Biden at the end of January. Mm-hmm. I know you know that Biden is facing allegations from a former Senate staffer of sexual assault. What's your reaction to those allegations?
Well, Vice President Biden has unequivocally denied the allegation and called for a full investigation into Tara Reade's claim because he believes, as I do, that all women should be heard and taken seriously when they raise these kinds of allegations. I think he's made an unprecedented call for transparency in asking the Senate to open their archives and search personnel files for any record of Reade's complaint. And I think it's also worth saying that, you know, he was thoroughly vetted when he was picked as Barack Obama's vice presidential running mate. And the people involved in that process have said that nothing like this allegation ever came up. So I think that the vice president is handling this as anyone should, calling for a full investigation, taking it seriously, making sure that the allegations are heard.
What about criticisms of the Democratic Party that there's a hashtag MeToo double standard here? You know, Biden gets support, still has the support among party leadership, gets a call for due process that maybe others accused of sexual misconduct have not.
Well, Vice President Biden has soberly and aggressively called for a full investigation here. You know, that's quite a contrast, for example, to when Brett Kavanaugh and his supporters rejected an investigation and behaved incredibly defensively in the hearing about the allegations. So I think the party's handling this appropriately, and I think the vice president is too. We're taking this seriously. We're calling for an investigation. I think, frankly, all Democrats are doing that, and the vice president is setting the right example.
Last question on this. He's the presumptive nominee, but he is not yet the nominee of the party. Some have said that with these allegations hanging over him, he ought to step aside. Do you think that's right?
No. I think that now if the investigation were to come out differently than everyone expects, then that's a different story. But from everything we know right now, he is the nominee because he's gone through an incredibly difficult process, a process that I was not successful at, and he was, and that's the process by which we choose the nominee for our party, and we should respect that.
Congressman, I'd really like to end where we began, which is with the issue of mental health. After a break in a minute, we're going to take calls with mental health professionals for listeners who may be struggling with anxiety or depression. And I just wonder what your message is to the people of Massachusetts listening right now who may just really be struggling to keep it together in this scary time.
My message is that you're not alone and that this is a scary time. It's a scary time for all of us. And so it's okay to admit that you need help. It's okay to ask for help, to call a friend or call a professional to get better. This is hard. I have every confidence that we're going to get through this as a community, as a country. We are going to get through this, but it's not easy. Nobody's saying that it's easy. And you should know that we're all in this together.
And that's Congressman Seth Moulton, who represents Massachusetts 6th District. Congressman Moulton, I'm glad that you're better, and I appreciate you joining us today. Thanks.
Thanks so much for having me. Take care.